Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everybody, it's Dawn from VI Talk and I have Justin with me today.
Hello. Hiya Dawn.
Hi, are you okay?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Welcome to doing your first interview for VI Talk.
Thank you very much.
We also have the great pleasure of introducing as well Jessie Dufton, who is the Blind Tread Climber. Hi, Jessie.
Hiya.
How are you?
Yes, good, thanks. Good,
okay. Thanks. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. Would you like to tell us a little bit, if you don't mind us asking, first of all, about describing your vision loss and what you can see and things like that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure. So I have retinitis pigmentosa, genetic disease that I've had my entire life. It's degenerative. So I was born with about 20% of central vision, maybe, and no peripheral vision. And that's like the high point of what I've been able to see. So from there, my eyesight has slowly deteriorated as the cells in the back of my eye and the retina slowly die off. So my eyesight degrades. And now I'm down to the point where I basically only have light perception in an extremely narrow field of view. So if you imagine that you're looking down a drinking straw and the drinking straw's got multiple layers of cling film stretched over the end. So essentially all you can tell is whether or not the end of the straw is light or dark. And to put it into perspective, I'm holding my hand, one foot in front of my face, and I'm waving it around and I can't see it. Obviously, I know it's there, but yeah.
So, Jessie, can you tell us sort of how you got into being quite a sporty person and how you got into climbing, really?
Yeah, so I like to joke that I didn't really have much choice in getting into climbing. So my dad was a keen climber. He was part of the mountain rescue when we lived briefly in the Lake District when I was younger. And he taught me to climb basically from the word dot. So I think I like climbed my first climb when I was two or something like that. And I led my first route when I was 11. It's something that that's always, you know, been a pretty big part of my life, to be honest. But it was only really when I went to university that I got the opportunity to climb more regularly. Because while I spent a bit of time living up in the Lake District, I spent most of my formative years in Winchester, which isn't a great climbing location. So, yeah, it was only when I went to university that I really got the chance to do it more regularly.
Yeah. How did people react when you said that you wanted to climb? And I bet people were saying, oh, you can't do that, you can't do it.
Well, most of the time, it's not been the case that I want to do it. I've already been doing it. And when people find out that I'm already doing it, that's when the shock kicks in. You know, I've never really had the situation where I've gone saying I want to go and do something because I'm already doing it. I can do it because I've just done it, right? So I think mostly it's when you tell someone that you're blind and you go climbing, they kind of think, oh, that's impressive, and then they go and see the video or the pictures, and then they go, oh god, I didn't realize you meant that, oh my god.
We like to shock people, don't we?
We do. and I know you've got a lovely, because I mean, for those that don't know, there was a documentary on BBC4 called Climbing Blind, which myself and Dawn both watched. Very good it was too. And of course your sighted guide is your partner Molly, isn't it, Jessie?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So how did you meet Molly? How did that kind of come about and she got into climbing?
So Molly and I met at university. Both Molly and I could already climb when we went to university, which is quite unusual. Most people that kind of joined the university mountaineering club, as it was, and never really done any climbing before. But both I had my dad and Molly had her uncle who taught us to lead. So in kind of outside climbing, the person who goes up first is called the leader. Right. And to be able to lead a climb is an order of magnitude more difficult than being able to follow someone else up it. You've got to worry about like all the safety equipment that you have to place to make it to minimize the risk. So you have to have someone who's prepared to give you an apprenticeship to do that, basically. And obviously, that was my dad and Molly's uncle. So we, we met at university, and yeah, through the University Mountaineering Club, and went from there, really.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent.
So how many climbs have you actually done to date?
I don't know. so you don't. We don't record all of them, and Molly's better at recording them than I am. But we've done over 1,300 routes together that we've logged. So it must be in the kind of, and when you count all the ones we've missed, it's got to be above 2,000 or something like that. So it's effective.
Can you explain to the listeners how you plan and how you actually go up the mountain? I know you obviously walk up, but it takes a lot of planning. You have to put a lot of trust in Molly, don't you? So she's your eyes at the end of the day.
Yeah, so I think the thing that's people might not appreciate that climbing is a bit like cycling, where there's loads of different kind of sub-disciplines. So in cycling, where you have like the velodrome, you have the Kirin, the team pursuit, etc., etc., there are different styles of climbing. So there's climbing on an indoor climbing wall, be that bouldering, which is very short with a crash pad underneath and no ropes, or be it lead climbing, where you kind of climb up and as you go you clip the rope through points on the wall, and the rope is there only as a safety mechanism. It's not there to aid your ascent, it's only there to catch you if you fall off. So the thing that I do is called trad climbing, which is traditional climbing. And there you're going up to a rock face that doesn't have any like artificial bits added to it. So as the leader climbs up first, they have all these special metal wedges and things that they can put into naturally occurring cracks in the rock, and they loop the rope through those. And I think that's the thing that like blows most climbers' minds when I tell them that I can't see, because they know what's involved in placing this safety kit, and it's fiddly, and if you get it wrong, like, and you fall off, then the consequences are going to be serious.
Absolutely.
I think that's the kind of the crux of it, as it were. And how do I do that? So I think over the years I've developed the ability to use my sense of feel primarily to allow me to do things which a sighted person would use their sight for. So I'll have a feel and I'll find a crack, and based on the size of the crack relative to the size of my hand, I'll know which piece of protection I need to put in that crack, and I'll know where on my harness I put that piece so I can go straight to it. And then you'll kind of put it in, and then you'll have a good feel and you'll check whether or not it's well seated. And there's just an element of skill and experience to that. And the thing that does help is that Molly is kind enough to kind of act as my sight guide. So she'll be stood at the bottom holding my rope, and she'll look up at the route and she'll say something like, okay, there's a crack 2 foot out to your right. Go and have a feel of that. Because she doesn't know whether or not that crack will take any gear. That's down to me, but she's looking and she's spotting the bits, spotting holds and opportunities for gear, and kind of describing those to me, either just by shouting, or most of the time we use like a radio headset just so she doesn't lose her voice.
Absolutely. And I bet you've had some really hairy moments, you know, during your time of climbing, have you?
A few.
Yeah. What's been the worst? What's been the scariest?
Having to deal with a fatality in the Alps, potentially.
Oh my goodness.
Not from my party, fortunately, but obviously I had to like call the helicopter, and yeah, by the time we reached, yeah, it was gonna, or in Greenland we were descending like the side of a mountain, and lowering kind of some of our friends with all our equipment, and this is in Greenland, which is literally in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and the anchor failed, and three of my mates went about 270 meters, something like that. So wow. That was quite hair-raising. Yeah.
Gosh.
They don't happen often, though. They don't happen often.
Good.
And I think that, like, while they aren't particularly pleasant experiences, I think, that I've definitely learned from them. And you find out a lot about yourself when you're in scenarios like that of extreme duress, whether or not you panic or whether or not you remain calm and do the right thing.
I guess the adrenaline sort of jumps in as well, doesn't it?
Quite a lot of it. You're almost going to autopilot, and you just make to make sure the autopilot is doing something useful and not flapping, you know.
Of course.
So what's your future at the moment? What are you planning at the moment? Anything in the pipeline?
That's almost impossible to say given the COVID situation at the moment.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So I had got a trip to Joshua Tree in the States planned, but that got cancelled because of the coronavirus.
Wow.
So until we get a bit more stability, it's really hard to say. I think it's probably likely that I'll go up to Scotland later in the year, because international travel seems, unlikely for a while. And there's plenty of ace stuff to do up in Scotland. So, but exactly what that'll be, I don't know at the moment.
It's very difficult for everybody at the moment, isn't it? It's very difficult. How do you actually train? How do you train? What do you do to keep yourself fit? Obviously, in this particular time as well.
In normal times, I'd spend a lot of time at the local climbing wall. But obviously, these aren't normal times. So I've got some training bits and bobs in my garage. So climbers use what they call a fingerboard, which is basically a thing that you strap to the wall. It's a bit like a chin-up bar, but instead of having like a bar that you hold, you have these little slots that you slot your fingers into of varying sizes. So most of the time you're kind of training by hanging your body weight and then perhaps some additional weight off a 20 millimeter edge, so that's just under an inch. So you'll do things like that, and then you'll obviously be doing pull-ups and core work and stuff like that. And then now lockdown has been eased, we're allowed to go climbing outdoors. So going out climbing at the weekends.
Yeah, it must have been a nightmare not being able to climb. How with the documentary Climbing Blind, Jesse, how did that come about?
So that came about because we reached out to Alistair Lee, is the filmmaker who made the documentary. Now he's fairly famous in kind of adventure filmmaking circles, the man to go to in the UK. So we went to a screening of, he does the Brit Rock Film Tour, which is a selection of climbing films that he's made in the previous year. And afterwards, I kind of went up to him and was interested to find out how he did his, how he selected his projects, you know, whether he approached people or whether people approached him. And I just mentioned that, you know, I'm blind and I lead trad, and that's quite unusual, I think. I think he didn't really know what to make of me at the beginning because it's so unusual. That he was like, is this guy for real? You know? but then we kind of went down to his local climbing wall and he saw me climb. He's like, all right, this guy's not kidding. Okay, right. There's definitely a story here. Because I think one of the things that really comes across in the film is that to me what I do is totally normal. I go and do it every day. It's something that I've always done. It just doesn't seem out of the ordinary to go to the crag at the weekend. But when you look at it from an outside perspective, blind guy goes and leads trad up to E1, you're having a laugh, mate, you know.
yeah. And what made you choose that particular climb?
So that one had been on all the film, all the routes that are featured in Climbing Blind, the kind of routes that I'd had on my radar for a while. So the Old Man of Hoy is the main kind of feature. That's this big sea stack off the coast of the Orkney Islands. And I'd already done the Old Man of Stour, which is kind of like its little brother. And any day when you're going out and climbing sea stacks, it's going to be a great day out. But the Old Man of Hoy is, really quite technically difficult. So it was only after I'd kind of been selected for the GB climbing team and put a load of training in that I felt that I was strong enough to go and attempt that.
Gosh, wow. And what stood out for me was that when you got to the top, it looked like an open book. Was that right?
Yeah, so you divide the climb up into what's called pitches. Those are essentially kind of little mini sections. So the Old Man Up Away is this pillar, and it's 137 metres tall, and your ropes are only 60 metres long, so you can't go from the bottom to the top in one go. Your ropes aren't long enough. So we split it into five pitches, because obviously it doesn't go straight up. You have to kind of wander around the towers. And on the last of these five pitches, you're climbing up this kind of open book corner, and that corner is formed by a cleft that kind of splits the stack at the top.
Wow.
And it's, just beautiful climbing. And you know that you've already done the hardest part of the climb. That's on like the third pitch. So you know that, you're almost there, and you kind of relax and enjoy.
Gosh, wow.
How do you learn about your climbs? Do you know the mountain climb? Do you actually get a tactile version of it, or do you just read up on it, or does somebody explain it to you? Or do you just go for it?
Climbs are usually described in kind of guidebooks, as it were. So it'll have a guidebook to a crag, and it'll list all the kind of potential lines on the crag and give each one a difficulty, and it'll have a short description. So the description might be, it's only a couple of sentences. It might be, climb the short wall to a sloping shelf, traverse right for 3 meters, and then climb the crack above, or something like that. That'll be the description of a climb. So what we usually do is Molly will we'll go to a crag and we'll work out what climbs the appropriate grade, and which ones we might want to do, and whether or any of them aren't blind person friendly, because some things are obviously, everything is basically harder, but some things are orders of magnitude harder, and some things are only quite a lot harder. So to give you an example, any climb where you have to traverse out sideways and you have to lead with your feet rather than climbing straight up, that's really hard, because while I do get a bit of sensitivity of what my feet are on through my rock shoes, it's not as good as if I can feel the hold with my hand first. Because if I can feel the hole with my hand first, I build up a 3D mental map of where it is in space, and then I can move my foot straight to it. But if you're traversing sideways and leading with your feet, you can't do that. So that makes it a hell of a lot more difficult. And if you were sighted, that wouldn't be the case. You could see the point to put your foot on and just go straight to it. So the grade that it gets given isn't really that appropriate for the difficulty that I'm going to experience.
Gosh. And do you work other than climbing? Do you what else do you do in your spare time?
In my spare time, I go climbing, and most of the rest of it, I work. Yes, I work for a clean energy technology company. So the company makes hydrogen fuel cells. So those are basically a bit like engines, but you put in hydrogen and electricity comes out, and the byproduct is water. You can use those to power basically anything that needs electricity. But the main applications are replacements for diesel generators, or for powering cars or drones.
And
I look after their patent portfolio for them.
Right. Okay.
So you mentioned that being part of the GB climbing team. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I'm part of the GB paraclimbing team. That is... competitions for people with a range of disabilities, not just visual impairments, but for people who are perhaps missing arms or legs, or who have conditions that affect their kind of coordination and stability and power. Obviously, I compete in the B1 category, the blind category. And that takes place on artificial climbing walls. So you have a selection of routes and in the competitions, and you basically compete on how far up you can get these routes. So each hold you get an extra point, and the routes are set at the appropriate difficulty that hopefully it'll split the field, and one person will get to the top, one person will get a few holds below the top, and then so on.
Gosh. Well, but, so have you won lots of medals
on top rope? So the thing that like kind of is unusual is the leading and the going first, because when you're on, when the rope's coming down from above you, you don't have half of the things to worry about. You don't have to worry about like the safety aspect. It's totally safe. You don't have to worry about like the rope work and controlling the risk and controlling your fear. All of those things just don't, you know, don't exist in indoor climbing. It's only about how hard you can pull.
And I bet you've been to lots of countries whilst doing that.
A fair few. So yeah, mostly the kind of countries you go to those for with the outside climbing rather than the competitions. I'm fairly new. I'm newish to the like the competition circuit, as it were.
Right. How long have you been doing that?
I think this is my third year on the team.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you compare
what's your
that favorite to
climb?
What's my favourite climb?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it will definitely be something outdoors. I mean, the Old Man of Hoy is pretty damn good.
It sounded it.
So that there's a route called Flying Buttress Direct at Stanage, which is this huge like overhang, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I think in terms of actual routes, yeah, possibly the Old Man of Hoy. Like, it takes a lot to beat that.
I bet. It did sound spectacular, I have to say.
I didn't think of a clutch that are kind of close on its heels, so.
Yeah. Oh, excellent, excellent. Well, so what, I guess I was going to say, what's next for you, you know? I guess just waiting for lockdown to totally ease before you can get back in.
Yeah, I mean, so at the moment we're going out for day trips in the Peak District, and obviously able to tick off a few of the things on my tick list, but yeah, to be able to go abroad, and I'd like to go to climbing in America, go to some of these places like out in Utah where they have these they call them splitterers, these amazing crack systems that completely cleave the crag. Going and do some of those would be pretty cool.
Gosh,
well, hope it gets lifted very soon and you can get out there possibly next year or something.
I think so, yeah, hopefully.
What advice would you give to anybody who's visually impaired who wanted to try climbing? Or
so probably the first, the easiest way to get into it is to go to a bouldering wall. Now, I said earlier, bouldering is where there's no ropes, it's just short, and there's a crash pad at the bottom. And in normal time, obviously all the climbing walls are shut at the moment because of coronavirus, but as soon as they open, that's your best chance of being able to get into it. If you're totally blind, then you'll probably need to convince one of your mates to, you know, tell you where the holds are. If you're more partially sighted and you'll be able to, you know, kind of make do, you might want to consider getting like a laser pointer and using that to designate which holds you're supposed to use. So how it works is at climbing walls, they have a whole number of different routes on the wall, and the routes are denoted by the color of the holds. So if you find it difficult to differentiate between the colors of the holds, then you might want to ask one of your mates to go to shine the laser pointer on the one that you need to use next.
Okay. Brilliant. Brilliant.
That's great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time today. I know you're a busy man.
Thank you for your time.
So thank you very much indeed.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.